Welcome back to Startup to Success on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.
And on top of it, how can you scale your business if you don't let go of perfectionism and start trusting people to do things? You can't. It won't be a scalable business. Let's talk a little bit about your book, The Art of Being Flossom.
It's my baby. I decided, it happened a few years ago. I got a little tired. I used to do marketing for a long time. I loved it. I was good at that. I still think I am, but I don't do it anymore. And at some point, I just, I think it was midlife crisis. It was 40. I decided to take some time off. I am an employee of my business. I actually love being an employee of my own business. It's wonderful, in addition to being an owner. And the book was born. Actually, when I came back from my sabbatical, I redefined myself. I rediscovered myself. I became an author more than an entrepreneur. I started writing. I associate myself with two titles more than anything else. I'm a writer and I'm an everyday life philosopher. I enjoy my life much more since I've done this shift, but occasionally I put on my business shark costume and occasionally I take a big broom and come in and sweep around and fix things. It happens.
Wow, that's amazing. You mentioned going through at 40, sort of reevaluating things. It's so interesting you mentioned that because I'm going through that too. And I don't know if my newborn baby sort of triggered it or the fact that I am in my 40s, I'm going through this process, but I have an 8-month-old baby and he really woke me up and made me realize that the two companies that I'm running, I've built it in a way where they're running on their own. That's fine. But I started wanting more. And I'm going through this phase as we speak where I'm just like, should I go back to school? Should I get my PhD? Should I write a book? Should I do? I'm just like, and my husband's like, are you insane? You have an 8-month-old baby. You're running two companies. You have your radio podcast show. You are thinking of something else. I'm like, I'm just not content. And he's just like, okay, I can't handle you. I don't know what's going on with you. It's probably a midlife crisis. So I would love your thoughts on this.
I've discovered this rule a long time ago. I think and again, that's about belief system, right? I've discovered this rule a long time ago. The more you do, the more capacity you have to do more stuff. The less you do, the less capacity you have to do stuff. I do not know if you've ever had a lazy day, and I know a lot of people are too busy to have lazy days, but sometimes it happens. And somehow it just goes so fast and you haven't done anything, and then you don't have time even to do anything because it's just passing too fast. The more, like I've noticed that 20 years ago, I've strongly believed in that. The more you do, the more time somehow you find to do more stuff.
There's this saying, it's an Armenian saying that my grandmother used to say, that the heavier the donkey's load, the faster the donkey goes. And every time I think of that, of adding stuff on my plate, I'm like, it's okay, I'll go faster. I'll go, not that I'm, you know, thinking of myself as a donkey, but
we do things differently.
Yeah.
That's the interesting thing about human productivity. We will use exactly the amount of time that we'll give ourselves for a task. Exactly. I can't refer to the research exactly, but I know that there is research that proves that. Like, that's why I do not know if you've ever noticed, but whenever you're giving any kind of deadline, you're just barely making it to that deadline usually. Because that's how we pace ourselves. We are used to that. And in fact, there is also the new school of active procrastination. People believe that they function better under stress, which is actually very arguable. But that aside, you can actually do a lot of stuff with enjoyment. Do you remember how we went to school when we were kids? We had 10 subjects in school. Sometimes we think that doing something means that you're doing it from morning till evening. For me, playing a harp, half an hour is enough. Sometimes you spend half an hour watching a silly movie. You know, it's your priorities. It's what you want to do. But we have so much time, 24 hours. Okay, 8 hours I sleep, actually. I personally like to sleep 8 hours, maybe more. But we have a lot of time. A lot of time. I only wrote my book 1 hour a day, two hours later, because I just loved the process so much.
How did you solidify on what to write about? To walk me through that journey of figuring out what to express.
So there are ways to write books, and I am working right now with a wonderful man, Michael Drew, who helps me actually to publish my book as well. But he has a workshop on creative, I think it's called creation process on writing a book. I remember the few times I've done it with him, in 2 hours, you'll pretty much end up with an outline of a book. He's really good to, at explaining it. So if you want, you can just talk to him about this process. But this is one way of writing a book. And I think that books are very different. I'm much more into fiction and classical novels, so I can talk about that a little better than personal growth books. But if you take fiction, for example, there are so many different ways of writing it, different styles, not just genre, but different styles of writing it. So the same, all these books are born very differently. So there are books which are more inspirational, books which are more like hard work and routines and procedures of writing them. So my book is a journey. Yeah. And I'm very obstinate. In fact, we have very funny conversations with my publisher. But I'm incredibly obstinate and I refuse to follow the algorithm because I believe that, that people are different and they need different approach. So some people want an algorithm because it helps them to structure, to write. I'm not like that. I'm an artist, so I write, I walk around, I make a tea, I do some laundry, I do something random. Oh my God, you know my new hobby? I'm starting a museum in my ancestral home. So I'm picking up some old items and then I restore them. I've started learning chemistry because I know how to clean brass and metal and things like that. So I may do all of these things because I'm hatching. And then suddenly it comes. And when it comes, I drop everything, I sit down and I pour it out. And it happens like this. So, but this is my process. So my book is a journey, it's an experience, it's not an algorithm. It's a little bit unpredictable, it's very obstinate, it's very not traditional, not normal. But that's how I do it because I'm an artist.
I'm so inspired. I am so inspired. Thank you. What a perfect timing for us to have this conversation. Talk about the Maverick 1000 on Richard Branson's Necker Island. I can't wait to hear about that.
Well, I've been there a few times and last time was actually about 4 years ago. So it's a good experience for sure. And for me, of course, while I love Yannick and Maverick, and I've been there actually so long ago when Joe Polish was going there as well. And the group is always wonderful. We're always huge friends. But of course, the big thing is meeting Branson on his own in his own natural habitat. And as I said, you know, your beliefs. Actually, it's a quote by one of our teachers, Eric Admins. Beliefs are viruses which feed on evidence. And as I said, that your goal defines your perception. So whatever you want to believe in, once you open the opportunity, you will start seeing the evidence. So for me, Branson was definitely one of the huge evidences to the idea that an entrepreneur is truly just a person who is playful in their life. Because he does so many wonderful things in his natural habitat. He's taught me to swim, actually. He does a lot of sports. I remember he goes to the village and teaches villagers to play tennis. Last time when we were there, his family was there, his kids and grandkids. And we spent quite a lot of time, actually, even with them, you know, just having breakfast. Or he swam from one island to another. And of course, he does work in between and charity and talks to entrepreneurs who he sees for the first time. And parties and whatnot. So it was such a wonderful example of how you can have it all. You can, if you allow yourself the thought, the belief. I do not know why we insist on constantly picking. Like Harv Eker says in his wonderful trainings about millionaire mindset, what is more important, a hand or a leg or an arm? How about both?
Both. I'll take both. Wow. I'm sure our listeners are going to be wondering, you know, how would you even join how would they go about joining the Maverick 1000? Like, do you get selected? Like, what's the process like?
You would have to talk to Yannick about that. In my times when we joined, the conditions were not terribly strict. We were supposed to have a business which does $1 million in revenue. It's actually not that much. And I guess the members of the group had to find you fun enough. I believe, you know, Oscar Wilde wisely said, life is too important to be taken seriously.
And right.
We always have to have space for humor in it and for fun. So I guess these are the conditions, but probably Yannick would tell you what are the current terms and conditions of joining. But you don't necessarily need to join that group. I think what's important is that you have to do what you love and enjoy it. And there are a lot of things I love to do with my kids. I don't need a lot of inspiration from outside world. I find inspiration in so many places. And of course, I love meeting wonderful people, but the thing is that people are people.
Right.
And sometimes when we chase celebrities, we actually put such heavy energy on us. So sometimes just enjoying yourself, just being literally, I'm sorry for using this fluffy word, but being in flow opens up so many doors. We had an event in Jordan, and we accidentally had three princesses at this event, and I accidentally managed to make friends with all three of them because I was the only one. Okay, I'm slightly unfair right now. Probably I wasn't the only one, but and of course I'm the co-founder of the business. I had an easier access, but we didn't talk business at all. We talked about life, about children. And they happen to be women. Princesses obviously are women. So I guess they related and they also had their children. So it's about being human.
Yeah.
And being human.
And that tends to attract them towards you more. I used to own a shoe company where I used to make really high-end custom shoes. And a lot of it was for celebrities. I live in LA, so we started making shoes for celebrities. And I'm horrible at celebrity names. I just don't know anybody's name. Even if, like, I just forget names. I'm horrible. So I would go to these parties. I would go to these events. And I would just stand there and be nice, polite, but I just would not say anything. And they would come talk to me because they were just so not used to somebody just kind of standing there and like, they're like, who is she? All of a sudden there was this curiosity as to who am I that I'm not going up to them and getting all, you know, whatever. But I do agree. I think people should not waste too much time. We're all people at the end of the day. We all have the same bones. Like, we're just the same type of people, and we shouldn't give celebrities so much energy and credit. And I mean, I'm not saying no credit, don't get me wrong, they work hard. But there's also luck. There's so many things that play in it, and just because they're celebrities, that doesn't make them any more special than us. I think entrepreneurs are my favorite celebrities, because they're the ones that make our world a better place. Everything around us that we look at, whether it's technology, whether it's the food we eat, whatever it is, somebody thought of it and turned that idea and productized it. And what upsets me is that at least when I was in grad school, there wasn't enough encouragement about people becoming entrepreneurs. And, you know, I don't know how it is now. I think it's a little bit better now. They do have special programs on entrepreneurship, but I still don't think entrepreneurship gets enough respect like doctors and lawyers do. What's your take on that?
You know, I just wanted to add one more very important thing about celebrities and famous people. It's not even about being yourself. It's about, do you actually enjoy the company?
Right.
And I wouldn't I wouldn't want to force myself to be with someone just because they are a big name and I might learn something from them. And that's a super important thing to remember. You can actually sometimes learn from people who are unassuming and find out how awesome they are. Much more important is whether you are genuinely enjoying the company, whether you're genuinely interested. And, you know, sincerity and honesty and just being what you are so much more important in any kind of relationship. And trust me, you learn from everyone, even from people on the streets, from people who, like, I learned so much from my masseuse. And sometimes he doesn't even realize that. Just the interaction, just stay curious, just ask questions, just be yourself, just be genuine. And that's what's so much more important. Now about entrepreneurship, unfortunately, I might not be a very good person to answer because I was brought up in Soviet Union, and
Which part of Soviet Union?
I'm from Estonia. I believe, judging by you mentioning your Armenian grandma, you must be from Armenia.
Yes, also Armenian.
I was a teenager when Soviet Union collapsed. So the thing is that I didn't have any role models for entrepreneurship, because in Soviet days, entrepreneurship was punishable by law. You would end up in jail, so it was illegal. When Soviet Union collapsed, because the system changed, a lot of entrepreneurship was about criminality and mafia and whatnot. It was a dirty thing for a long time. Of course, it's not the case anymore, but these were the years that formed my worldviews and ideas. And when I married Vishen, we're divorced now, but when I married him, he seemed like a unicorn to me. He was an entrepreneur, a blissful entrepreneur. He was neither criminal, nor stressed, nor, you know, in danger. And I could not believe that. And I was about 25 when I first got any kind of decent view of entrepreneurship being something else, but incredibly risky and dangerous.
That's incredible. First of all, I've been to Estonia when I was a child. I grew up in the old Soviet Union too. I escaped right when it collapsed in 91. And I do struggle still with some of the foundation that was embedded in me, the pillars that were embedded in me, the perfectionism, sitting straight. Remember how we asked to go like this, you know, raise our hands so straight and so much stuff. And I think the perfectionism is what I struggled getting rid of over time. And that was just, it was just the way I was brought up, communist society, you know how strict they were. But looking back, I do see, I felt the same way about entrepreneurship. And I remember telling my family, I was about 9 years old, saying that I want to have my business. And I remember my neighbor attacked me so badly and said, You're a girl. You should not be talking about having a business. You're going to get married. If you go to school, you're going to get married and be a stay-at-home mom. And I started crying and I said, I don't want to be a stay-at-home mom. I want to work. And my mom pulled me aside and said, stop talking about your dreams. You can take action, do whatever you want, but don't talk about it, because then people are going to start attacking you. And sadly, that was the society I was in. People were attacking me right and left. And looking back now, I'm like, God, they must have planted some negative seeds in there. Even though I rejected it and pushed it out, sometimes I do get fearful of little things. And then I'm like, it must be that little stupid neighbor that mentioned this, and somehow it's still in there, you know, in my head, and I just push it away. What do you do when certain fearful thoughts come in? How do you push them away?
I don't. That's the interesting thing. In our society, especially in personal growth industry, we are a little bit judgmental about our thoughts and feelings, particularly. Fear is a feeling, although it usually expresses itself in certain thoughts as well. First of all, courage is not absence of fear. And here I did do a training a long time ago by Harv Eker. He had a wonderful training called Enlightened Warrior Training Camp, and he drilled the courage into me. But then, of course, you know, I guess you have to be also a little bit naturally courageous to start with. But generally, courage is not absence of fear. So fear is going to be part of the mix. The question is how you frame it. For example, I do speak on stage and I still get nervous, but I don't frame it as, I'm stressed, I'm nervous. I know that stress is the way our body prepares for a challenging time. So for example, in the old days when you got scared and your blood started pumping, your heart pumped the blood very quickly and you started breathing, like, it was so that your body was ready to escape a predator, right? So right now it's the same. Stress or fear is not bad for you. It's your body's way to prepare to be in the peak shape. So now when I go on stage, I know, and I've noticed that if I'm completely relaxed, I actually perform worse. When I have a little bit of this excitement, and they say excitement is fear plus breath, or fear is excitement without breath. So I frame it as an excitement, as an necessary condition for me to perform well. And now I don't push it aside. So our society is a little bit judgmental about the feelings that we feel. We, rather than deal with our emotions, with our thoughts, with our feelings, we try to push them away. And that is the wrong thing to do. You have to, and we could go into a very long discussion about that, because that's my favorite topic, in fact. But the thing with anything unpleasant, whether it's unpleasant thoughts, unpleasant feelings, you have to hear them. Because emotions are like, like the physical sensations are given to our body so that we pay attention to what happens to our body. So let's say if you put a hand on a hot surface, because you have physical sensations of hotness or pain, you remove your hand and your hand doesn't burn and you don't deteriorate. People who don't feel physical pain, this condition is called congenital analgesia, they don't survive to grown-up age because their bodies break down. Mm-hmm. Any kind of unpleasant emotions are like physical pain. They're given to us so that we pay attention to those parts of our life which require our attention or healing.
Interesting.
So, and the thing with any kind of unpleasant emotions, once you get the information, they pass. Right. So pushing them aside is wrong because you're not hearing the message. You have to hear it. You have to look at it. You have to acknowledge it and you have to be honest with it. I'm feeling anger. Yes, I'm such a woke, beautiful human being, loving human being. But yes, I rationally dislike this person. Listen, and it will go away. That's as simple as it is.
I'm going to try that because for some reason, that particular conversation, I keep pushing it away. And I feel like the more I push it away, the more it resurfaces itself. And I've read about, let it flow, just get through it. But somehow I'm having a challenging time doing that. So definitely I'm going to take your advice on that. How can our listeners learn more about you, get in touch with you, learn more about the upcoming book?
Well, it's Christina Mand. It's Christina with a K, the Soviet spelling, M-A-N-D. This is my handle on Instagram and Facebook everywhere. And I do have a website, christinamand.com. That's where you find information about me. And I do love to talk about being imperfect. I think my imperfection is what makes me so flawsome.
I would love to bring you back on the show and just only talk about being imperfect and imperfect and flossome. And I mean, thank you so much. I learned so much personally, and I hope our listeners enjoyed this conversation. And I'm sure I'm going to get them asking me to bring you back again, Christina.
Thank you so much.
Such a pleasure. Thank you. And good luck with the book.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for joining Startup to Success with Maria on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3 SoCalArmenian.com.